Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Governor Mike DeWine has ordered the Ohio Department of Medicaid to rebid the state's contracts with the companies that manage billions of dollars of benefits. The goal is to save taxpayer money. Ohio already is leading the way with new rules for pharmacy benefit managers when it comes to administrative fees and how much they can charge the insurers. Today, we're talking about why pharmacy benefit managers are a problem. Joining us is Columbus Dispatch reporter Kathy Kandisky. She's been covering the story from the beginning. Welcome back.
Welcome. Thanks for having me.
States across the country now are citing the reporting you've done with your colleagues on this topic. And I wanted you to kind of, if you could, take us back to the beginning. What triggered this ongoing series in the first place?
Well, it's probably over a year ago that we started getting complaints from independent pharmacists that the rates they were being paid by pharmacy benefit managers were basically the amount they were getting paid to fill prescriptions was below their cost, and it was causing them financial hardship. Some pharmacies were closing, others were selling, things like that. So that's what kind of drew us into the situation. It was the impact it was having on small town mom and pop type pharmacies.
The state of Ohio is also prepping for a potential lawsuit against pharmacy benefit managers.
Correct.
Middlemen, I should say. The governor has said that he thinks the system of middlemen, known as PBMs, pharmacy benefit managers,
correct,
has been a ripoff. So how so?
Well, it's all about the money. You know, it's all follow the money. And basically, we can start with pharmacy benefit managers, what their job is.
Yeah.
Insurance companies, Medicaid, which is, you know, Ohio's health insurance program for the poor and disabled, they hire managed care plans to oversee the health benefits. And those managed care plans, in turn, hire pharmacy benefit managers to handle pharmacy benefit portion of your health insurance. So what they do is they negotiate drug prices with the drug manufacturers. They decide what drugs are included on the formulary, so which drugs are covered under your plan. They pay the rates paid to pharmacies to fill the prescriptions, and then they bill the managed care companies or the state, in the case of Medicaid, for the cost of that. So the problem has been is what's happening to the money. And there's kind of a couple areas of concern. One is called spread pricing, and that's what was affecting the independent pharmacists. The pharmacy benefit managers were charging the state more than they were paying the independent pharmacists to fill the prescriptions and keeping that profit, which is called spread pricing.
Well, isn't that what they do? I mean, as middlemen, isn't that they're taking a cut, right? Isn't
right,
that
the
normal?
Question is what's a reasonable cut?
And here's the twist, right? We don't know.
Well, Ohio actually found out on spread pricing. Ohio commissioned a study last spring, that found out there was an 8.8% price spread. That's the difference between what they were billing the state versus what they were paying the independent pharmacists. That was over $200 million that they were pocketing in a year's time. The study found that the PBMs were charging 3 to 6 times more per transaction than the going rate. So it's excessive. And that was one aspect of the problem that came out in the study. That's what prompted, I think, the state to start taking action and ultimately DeWine to call for the contracts to be rebid.
Mostly this involves large Medicaid contracts with states, right?
Correct.
Those are the biggest insurers of all.
Correct.
And how does this affect everybody else who isn't on Medicaid?
Well, Medicaid is such a big program. I mean, Ohio Medicaid alone spends about $25 billion a year, about $3 billion a year on pharmacy medications. That's money that taxpayers pay. So whatever happens in Medicaid and likewise in Medicare, which is the program for seniors, it often impacts what goes on in the independent commercial markets.
And the states negotiate the Medicaid issues?
Correct.
The federal government does Medicare.
Correct.
Okay. How's the federal government responded to all this?
Well, you've heard President Trump, actually for the last year, be talking about this, but most recently he's putting the squeeze on PBMs for rebates that they get, which is another source of revenue that goes into the PBMs.
Yeah. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is Kathy Kandisky. She's of the Columbus Dispatch. She's part of a team of reporters that have been covering the issue of pharmacy benefit managers and how they work in the healthcare business and what impact they have on what we pay for prescriptions. If you have a question or comment, I welcome them. I have about a million. But if you have a question or comment, I welcome them. You can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at all. allsides at WOSU.org. We're lucky because Kathy's going to be with us for the whole hour. Coming up, we're going to hear from an Ohio State professor of clinical pharmacy about what he knows about this process. And we're also going to hear from a University of California Hastings College of Law professor and the author of the forthcoming book, Drugs, Money, and Secret Handshakes, The Unstoppable Growth of Prescription Drug Prices. So 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Why the most of this involves these large Medicaid contracts with states. Why the secrecy? Why don't we just know how these things work?
Well, I think from the pharmacy benefit managers, the secrecy is key. Nobody knows what everyone else is getting paid. What the study that the state did showed that while independent pharmacists were getting one rate, big box chains like Walmart were getting another rate, Kroger was getting another rate. So the rates are all different. Nobody knows what anyone else is getting paid. And a lot of the contracts have language in them that forbid them from talking about their rates or talking about not only to each other, to their competitors, but also to patients. Sometimes a patient can come into a pharmacy and the pharmacist will know that if he paid out of pocket, it would be cheaper than paying the copay. That happens sometimes, but they're forbidden under gag rules in the contracts from letting patients know that.
I think a lot of people just assume, and I did this recently, it was getting medication for my dog. And it's for epilepsy. Mm-hmm. And I went to one.
Which is probably an expensive medication.
It can be. And went to one pharmacy and they were going to charge me almost $200 a month. And I went to another and they were going to charge me $30 a month.
So you really have to shop around.
You
and that's
do.
Frustrating
and you don't
for
think
consumers.
About that in terms of something
no,
as
don't.
Critical as medication.
You don't. And you know, if you're on a prescription regularly, like say a blood pressure medication, you just constantly go back to the
and
same
you
pharmacy.
You go to your same pharmacy.
Right.
You want to go there.
But you don't know. You have to shop around, especially if you're on expensive drugs.
And you can't ask them. In some cases, if I just paid out of pocket, would there
no,
be a difference?
No, you can ask.
You can ask,
you can
but
ask.
They can't. They may not be able to tell you.
If you ask, I think that most of them will tell you. A lot of them, pharmacists tell me that if they get asked the question, they'll answer it, but they're not allowed to offer the information.
Okay.
And I should point out that that's changing. Congress passed a law to eliminate gag rules, and Ohio has a similar law that passed the House but not the Senate. I'm sure it'll get reintroduced this session.
How have PBMs, pharmacy benefit manager organizations, and companies responded to the criticism and the calls for greater transparency?
Defensively. They're very defensive about it. Their argument, their perspective on the whole situation is that they're in place to get better deals. They negotiate rebates that actually bring down the price of drugs. That's their whole argument, that they're saving the state Medicaid program money. They're saving private insurers money. That's what they argue. They dispute the fact that rebates drive up the cost of drugs. I mean, to me, it seems very simple. If a drug manufacturer is paying a rebate to a PBM, how are they going to recover the money? They're going to up the cost of the drug to recoup the rebates. The PBMs argue that that's not the case, and they cite some studies that they themselves, the industry, has commissioned to say that that's not true. But I have serious concerns about that. So from the PBM perspective, secrecy by design helps with their business model.
A Yahoo report said that the current debate over rebates track back to a few years ago when PBMs increased their negotiating power to get better discounts by threatening to exclude certain drugs
Correct.
From their lists of covered drugs known as formularies. Now, a lot of us think, have thought that formularies were just what the insurers thought were the best drugs for us to take, and that's what they would
the
cover because they were the best.
The least expensive as well.
And to persuade the benefit managers to include their drugs, drug makers boosted the rebates. And that sounds a lot like kickbacks or extortion.
I would say kickbacks is a very appropriate word. And you're right. I mean, you may not be getting the best or cheapest drug. You may be getting the drug that offered the company that offered the biggest rebate. There's no question about it.
Exactly. So is that legal?
It does. I suppose. I mean, I don't know of anyone going to jail over it or anything, but it doesn't seem. I mean, it's funny you bring that up because that's what some of the pharmacists we talk to ask us. How is this legal? I don't know. But I think what Ohio is doing is trying to take action to tighten up the contract. The question now is, has the PBMs done anything illegal? Probably not based on the contracts they're operating under at the moment. But the question is, how can a state Medicaid program tighten up these contracts to prevent this kind of behavior?
And then going to that topic about what pharmacists can and can't do with the consumer directly, John in Columbus, you're on the air with Kathy Kandisky of the Columbus Dispatch. Hi, John.
Hi, thank you. I'm wondering, you mentioned that pharmacists can give you the information if it's cheaper to pay directly rather than insurance, if you ask. They're certainly permitted to do that. Information like that, why isn't that put at the pharmacy? You are, by law, permitted to ask us these questions so that the consumer knows, rather than it being something they have to look on the Internet or
wherever. Listen to this show for. Yeah,
right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We love listening to you, Ann. Don't give me
No, that's okay, Jed. Thank you. Kathy?
That's a good question. I don't really have an answer. I would guess that it would be prohibited under their gag rule in the contract, is why pharmacists have told me they give the information if they're asked.
Okay, John, thank you for that call. And then Charlie in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Charlie.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
My initial question was, can you use Cardinal and CoverMyMeds to sort of show the old system for the PBMs and the new, and whether there's any advantages in the newer distribution methods? And then the second one is, I was reading a YouTube from one of my friends who's part of the medical research group at Dartmouth Medical Center. And it was showing like this four quadrant model where it's price and efficacy, you know, on the X and the Y axis. And, you know, a lower priced drug that was more valuable was $12.62, and then a more expensive and less useful drug was $90, and that one was, you know, the majority of the marketplace. I mean, that may be an anomaly and an aberration, but why aren't they also figuring out which drugs are best and promoting those, as well as what the fast car said, tell every consumer what is the best option.
Well, I think you're talking about...
Yeah, go ahead.
I think it kind of goes back to the warped incentives we were talking about earlier, where the PBM is more interested in what drug company gives them a big rebate versus what might be the better or least expensive drug.
Listeners, we are going to be talking with PBMs in the future. Today we wanted to focus with experts and with the journalists. One of the journalists has been covering this since it became an issue over a year ago, since it emerged as a problem. But we will be talking to PBMs going forward in the future, so I look forward to that program as well. Hopefully they will join us. My guest is Kathy Kandisky. She's a Columbus Dispatch reporter. For over a year, she has been covering the issue of pharmacy benefit managers, also known as PBMs. They're the kind of the middleman between big insurers, everyone from the states to big insurance companies, and they negotiate the drug prices that
and
we
pay. And if you don't know that you have a PBM or not, think CVS, Caremark, Express Scripts, OptumRx. Those are the three big ones.
Okay. We will continue our conversation. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Today we're talking about pharmacy benefit managers. They are the pharmacy supply chain middlemen who in 2017 alone provided states with more than $20 billion in rebates, an average of $450 million for each state that uses so-called PBMs. That's according to a three-month national survey by the Columbus Dispatch as part of an ongoing series that has attracted attention from state Medicaid managers from coast to coast. Still with us is Dispatch reporter Kathy Kandisky, who is part of the reporting team on this project. Joining us is Professor of Clinical Pharmacy at Ohio State, Donnie Sullivan. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Ann.
And also Robin Feldman. She teaches law at the University of California Hastings College of Law, and she's the author of the forthcoming book, Drugs, Money, and Secret Handshakes, The Unstoppable Growth of Prescription Drug Prices. She joins us by phone. Welcome, Robin Feldman.
Good to be here.
Robin, this isn't your first book on the topic of drug pricing. In 2017, Cambridge University Press published another one titled Drug Wars, How Big Pharma Raises Prices and Keeps Generics Off the Market. How do pharmacy benefit managers figure into your analyses at this point?
Well, pharmacy benefit managers come in after the generics get to market, the cheaper drugs get to market. The first book I looked a lot at what happens to delay those drugs when they get to market. The next problem happens once they're on the market. How do patients get channeled towards the more expensive drugs? That's where the PBMs come in. But on both sides, what we see is pharmaceutical companies exploiting the system to try to protect and build walls around their monopolies. We're the patients, we end up paying.
Donnie Sullivan, what do we know about the genesis of PBMs? Where did they come from? They weren't always this powerful, right?
Yeah, I mean, PBMs have been around for a long time. And the way they started years ago was you had the big insurance companies that didn't have a lot of expertise in how to deal with the pharmacy benefit piece of it. So they contract out or carve out the pharmacy piece of it, and the insurance companies contract with them to try to help manage the formularies and the prescription drug costs of the pharmacy benefit piece for the health insurance company. So that's how they really, really started, is to kind of help the large insurers kind of control costs and provide better effective care on the prescription side.
Kathy, you've written about how Medicaid officials have stepped in after the Dispatch reported that CVS Caremark had slashed prices it was paying to pharmacists and independent pharmacists primarily. You talked about that earlier in the program. How does this play into the equation? Why are they doing that?
Why or what?
Why does CVS Caremark slash those prices? Are they there? Because there's other pieces to this as far as buying out pharmacies, taking them over, putting them out of business.
Oh, why they slash the reimbursement rates paid to pharmacies. I get what you're saying. That's a good question. I mean, the most likely answer is they do it to save money. But the irony of what we found in our reporting was they were slashing prices that they were paying to independent pharmacies. And then CVS, the retail side, was following up with letters to these independent pharmacists saying, we know times are tough, rates are low, interested in selling, which to me seems pretty anti-competitive. But so far, I don't know of anything that's happened because of it.
Robin, go ahead.
There's another anti-competitive aspect to that pharmacy clawback game. There are two different types of pharmacies. There are the independent ones, and then there are the pharmacies within, for example, CVS's own chain. So if CVS does a clawback from all of these pharmacies, all of the pharmacies are complaining, I'm being hurt. However, CVS has a different branch. It's PBMs. The PBM is getting all of those nice clawback payments. It's just going from one pocket to the other. So if you're the big guy, stays in your pocket. If you're the independent guy, boy, you really get fleeced.
You know, Robin Feldman, I'll ask you the question. How is this legal? Because I'm sure there's people out there listening right now. They're like, wait a minute. This doesn't seem fair. Therefore, how could it be legal?
Yeah. So that is one of the pieces of the proposals we see in Washington right now that's come out by Health and Human Services Secretary Azar. And that has to do with removing what's called the safe harbor. Without the safe harbor, all of these payments from drug companies to the middle players, at least in the Medicare system, should be considered illegal kickbacks to government agencies. You're not allowed to pay people to do something good for your product. So Washington is talking about removing that safe harbor, and that's what's protecting the companies. Now, there are some problems with that plan. It removes the safe harbor for rebates, but it leaves in place a safe harbor for all kinds of other payments that drug companies make to the PBMs. And the concern for me is that drug companies will just shift the dollar flow say, this is not a rebate. This is an administrative fee. This is a data monitoring fee. This is an elephant.
Right.
Whatever you call it, it's a money flow.
It all comes down to a lack of transparency. You really don't know what people are getting paid. And as Robin pointed out, you really have to ask about all manufacturers' monies, not just rebates, because they have all kinds of fees that they kind of hide that you don't realize they're getting money. There's another stream of revenue coming from.
Donnie Sullivan, back when I was a pharmacy aide in high school, the pharmacist put drugs in pills and bottles and did some kind of compounding every once in a while. But I can't even imagine the guy I worked for dealing with these kinds of issues. How are you training pharmacists coming up out of Ohio State to deal with these issues?
You know, we've really bulked up our clinical curriculum over the last couple of years. We just went through a complete curricular redesign that all of our students are going through right now to, you know, pharmacists are doing more than they've ever done. They're giving immunizations. They're doing comprehensive medication reviews. They're doing medication therapy management. There's talk of doing point of care testing. So pharmacists are getting a lot more clinical in what they do. But the dispensing piece is still an important part of what we do. We still need to make sure we get the right drug to the right patient in the right dose at the right time and educate the patient on how to properly take those drugs and watch for side effects and manage for side effects.
But you never before, it was never an issue of and also get them a decent fair price.
You know, it always has been. But when you think about how things have progressed over the last several years, when you look on the pharmacy side, about 90% of all prescriptions we dispense are paid for by some type of third party insurance. So from a pharmacy perspective, you have three PBMs that control almost 90% of the market. And here you are, whether it's an independent or a chain pharmacy like a CVS or a Walgreens or a Kroger, they come in and they offer you a contract. And if you don't accept the terms of the contract, you're looking at losing 20, 30, 40% of your business. And it's really to the point now, I really truly believe that if we don't get this reimbursement issue figured out on the pharmacy side, we are on the brink of a catastrophe.
How so?
Where it's to the point where what we're seeing in the market now for pharmacies and with pharmacists is chains are cutting hours of pharmacists. They're cutting back staff because really when you think about it, the reimbursement has gotten so bad on 90% of what they dispense. The only control they have to try to cut costs on their end is either to buy it a little bit cheaper or to cut their labor costs. So it's to the point where if this isn't figured out in the next couple of years, it's going to be financial disaster. And I really believe that you're going to start seeing not just independents, but on the other side, the chain side, you're going to start seeing pharmacies start to close on that side as well.
Huh. Well, didn't Target just sell to CVS their pharmacies?
Yeah, Target sold to CVS. It's been about a year and a half, 2 years ago.
But meanwhile, Walmart just booted CVS.
They did. Well, interestingly enough, that study that Ohio Medicaid commissioned showed that CVS Caremark was paying Walmart 46% less than it was reimbursing at CVS retail pharmacies. So that may have been kind of the undercurrent to what the dispute was about, but they've reached some kind of agreement. I assume that Walmart's getting a better reimbursement rate, but the terms have not been disclosed.
Robin Feldman, your forthcoming book, Drugs, Money, and Secret Handshakes, in the subtitle you reference the unstoppable growth of prescription drug prices. Is it unstoppable, or do you just mean as things stand now, if things don't change? Are we headed toward that catastrophe that Donnie Sullivan referenced?
Heavens, I hope it's not inevitable. But we are seeing extraordinary drug price rises in the last few years, in the last decade. Let me give you one example. There's a drug called Acthar Gel. It's used to treat infant seizures and also arthritis. Today, it costs $40,000 per vial, and that's a 100,000% increase since 2001 when it cost $40. Oh, and in Canada, it cost $33. These are extraordinary prices, but prices for new drugs and rare conditions aren't the only problem. Drug companies have raised their prices most sharply for commonly used medications to treat diabetes, high cholesterol, and asthma. So it's all ordinary citizens, particularly seniors, who are hurting in this game. Part of the way that drug companies are able to do that is something that the government is helping them with, and that is they're allowing companies to continue piling on new protections, new patents, and new what are called regulatory exclusivities that block out new entrants from the market. And that's a huge problem. So I've studied all of the non-biologic drugs on the market for an entire decade and looked at all of the ways that drug companies extend their protection, keep other generics or competing drugs from getting into the market. And more than three-quarters of the drugs that get new patents aren't new drugs coming on the market. They're just existing drugs where the drug company is piling on new protection. So we're largely recycling and repurposing old drugs, making little tweaks and adjustments, not inventing new ones. We're just seeing a lot of churn.
That's Robin Feldman. She teaches law at the University of California Hastings College of Law. She's the author of the forthcoming book, Drugs, Money, and Secret Handshakes, The Unstoppable Growth of Prescription Drug Prices. We also have Donnie Sullivan. He's a professor of clinical pharmacy at Ohio State. And Kathy Kandisky, a Columbus Dispatch reporter who, with a team of reporters, has been covering the issue of pharmacy benefit managers and their role in the growth of prescription drug prices and also the opaqueness of how those deals are cut between the drug producers and the insurers that pay for them. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. And Stanford and Dayton, you're on the air. Hi, Stanford.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. You know, you talk about
Stanford, I mean, could I interrupt you for just a second? Could you pull the phone away from your mouth?
Okay.
Okay.
I got it up now.
That's better. Go ahead.
Yes. I was going to answer the question that you say, how? Go ahead.
Stanford, you're going to have to, why don't we talk to Stanford about turning off the radio and taking care of that business. I think what he's going to ask, though, is the common perception is that the manufacturers, just as Robin Feldman kind of described there a second ago, are behind the price increases. And the manufacturers for many years have said that, well, that's because of research and development. Again, Robin Feldman explained that they're just tweaking things. They're not really doing that much different. But now they're kind of flipping the script, right, Kathy Kandisky?
Well, there's no question that the drug manufacturers are pointing fingers at the pharmacy benefit managers, and the pharmacy benefit managers are pointing their fingers right back at the drug manufacturers. I think it's safe to say that there's fault with both sides of the equation.
Yeah, I mean, you agree, Donnie Sullivan?
Yeah, I mean, even the manufacturers, even the largest manufacturers, which they do a lot of good. They do it. There's a lot of cutting edge research that goes on out there. Even they're getting squeezed by the PBMs now, because the PBMs, again, you got three of them that control the majority of the market. Go to them and they say, you know, if you want your drug on our preferred formulary, then you're going to give us a little bit bigger price decrease or rebate than what you're offering up. And if you don't want to play ball with us, then we'll just leave your drug off the formulary. So even the manufacturers are getting caught in the middle by the PBMs in many cases.
Robin Feldman, just three PBMs control 90% of the market out there. I go, is that legal? How can they do that? Aren't there antitrust issues involved in this?
There are antitrust rules about markets. And unfortunately, you generally don't see the federal government step in if you have three players in a market. Usually they don't move in unless you see one or two players in a market. And you have to be able to find anti-competitive behavior. Here's the key problem, and one of your guests alluded to it earlier, and it's the secrecy. So the deals between the PBMs and the drug companies are guarded as fiercely as Fort Knox. They are claimed as trade secrets, which I think is a spurious claim, but even the government is not allowed to see these contracts, even when the government is the client. Even the health plan is not allowed to see these particular contracts. That secrecy makes it very difficult for government agencies to track down the bad behavior and to bring cases against it.
But our reporting showed, which was one of the things that surprised me the most, was that the Department of Medicaid knew how much it was paying the managed care companies and paying the PBMs, but they did not know how much the PBMs were paying the pharmacies to fill prescriptions. They had no idea to what extent that price spread was occurring.
Why? So go ahead, Robin.
I'm sorry. Here's how it works on the ground. If I'm a health plan, I know what John Doe paid when he bought his heart medication this month. I see what happened at the pharmacy. I can figure out what I paid and what the cost was. However, that's at the point of sale. Down the line, somewhere in the year, my PBM will hand a nice check to me. It's got some rebates in it for that drug, for lots of other people who bought that drug, maybe for people who bought other drugs. So there's no way for me to tease out what the actual cost is for each drug. Only the PBM sees that, and only the drug company knows what it's really charging.
You know, Ann, people are really confused about it. We hear spread pricing. It's been talked about a lot. Let me give you an example that will really make it clear. So let's say you have a sinus infection and you go to your physician and you get a prescription for Augmentin and you take it to the pharmacy to get it filled. Okay. Well, you have a copay you pay. It may be $10. Okay. So your pharmacy fills it. You pay the $10. And then the PBM reimburses the pharmacy an additional $5. So the total cost out of pocket is $15, $10 by the patient and $5 by the pharmacy. So the pharmacy collects the $15. Well, the problem is then nobody knows, or the PBM goes back to the insurance company or to the employer if they're self-insured, and they charge them $28 for that same prescription. So that $13 difference there, called the spread, actually goes in the PBM's pocket. And when you're talking about a generic drug where the average price of a generic drug is somewhere around $14, $15, that's a lot of money and a large percentage, and nobody knows what that spread is or how that spread is come about. Because that's what's secret.
Right.
We're going to continue our conversation. We are talking about what are called pharmacy benefit managers. They're the pharmacy supply chain middlemen. In 2017 alone, they provided states with more than $20 billion in rebates, an average of $450 million for each state that uses so-called PBMs. That's according to a three-month national survey by the Columbus Dispatch. Joining us is Kathy Kandisky of the Columbus Dispatch. He's part of that team that's been reporting on this issue for many months. You just heard from Donnie Sullivan. He's a professor of clinical pharmacy at Ohio State University. And also Robin Feldman. She teaches law at the University of California, Hastings. She is the author of the forthcoming book, Drugs, Money, and Secret Handshakes, The Unstoppable Growth of Prescription Drug Prices. We would like to hear from our listeners if you have a question or comment. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Maybe you've noticed that the cost of pharmaceuticals has increased more than ever in recent years. For years, pharmaceutical manufacturers justified the cost by saying they were needed to fund research and development. Now, Big Pharma point to pharmacy benefit managers. We're talking about the role of pharmacy benefit managers, known as PBMs, where they came from, how they have impacted the equation that determines what you pay at the drugstore. Ohio is among 11 states that began investigating PBMs last year, inspired very much by the work of Columbus Dispatch reporters on an ongoing series about PBMs. We'll have a link to that series on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Still with us is one of those reporters, Kathy Kandisky. Also with us, Robin Feldman. She teaches law at the University of California, Hastings College of Law, and she is the author of the forthcoming book, Drugs, Money, and Secret Handshakes, The Unstoppable Growth of Prescription Drug Prices. She's still with us by phone, and also with us here in the studio, Donnie Sullivan. He's a professor of clinical pharmacy at Ohio State. Robin Feldman, you said something earlier. You made the comparison about one drug. I can't remember what it is. I think it was arthritis and seizures in children. But you said it costs $40,000 a vial in the United States and $33 for the same amount in Canada. And I guess that, you know, my natural question is, what are they doing different in Canada?
So Canada and a number of other countries do have central negotiating systems for drugs. So they have a one-payer system. You don't have individual health plans to choose among. That gives them more power. Some people also suggest that drug companies are pulling all of their profits out of the United States, and then they're able to cut better deals abroad where they're getting pressure for it. And I think the answer to that is that our government is a buyer like anybody else. And if I were going to buy a car and I saw one in a lot next door that was just the same and being charged a much lower price, I'd go and say, I want the price next door. That's what some of the proposals that are coming out of Washington now are suggesting, reference pricing. And the government says, hey, if you're selling the same drug for a whole lot less in Europe or Canada, that's what I'm willing to pay for it. You know, I also wanted to point out something before that, mm-hmm. that both Kathy Kandinsky and Donnie Sullivan alluded to. As Kathy put it, you know, there are no white hats here. Everybody's got a hand in the till. And we had a wonderful example from Donnie Sullivan of how that spread pricing works when you go to the pharmacy. The same deals happen with hospitals and also with some doctors. So drug companies pay the same kind of rebates to the hospitals, to clinics that administer medication, to doctors who give injections or infusions in their offices, like your vaccines, or if you buy a medication at a doctor's office. The doctor at hospital charges the patient the sky-high list price. Later in the year, the hospital or doctor or clinic gets a shiny rebate check from the drug company and pockets the difference.
I want to turn now to a caller, Jim in Columbus. You're on the air. Hi, Jim.
Hi.
Go ahead.
So you guys have been talking a lot about the formulary, and I think there's a subtle distinction or aspect of it that you haven't really covered. Formulary is not the list of covered drugs. It's the list of auto-approved drugs. So the pharma companies are using this rebate system to try to pressure people to keep the expensive drugs on the formulary and the generics off. But if they fail there, that's where they go to companies like Cover My Meds, where they pay them to try to drive. There's a really complicated process called prior authorization to get things that aren't on the formulary, and they pay Cover My Meds to help automate that, to even if it gets taken off the formulary, to still get people to on the expensive drugs over the generic drugs. So they're kind of hitting it from both sides.
Huh. Robin Feldman, does that sound familiar?
So that particular company I wasn't aware of, but it does sound familiar. They're very complex processes for getting drug payments, and the drug companies have been very good about protecting their profits and their bottom lines, giving out all kinds of incentives to drive you, the patient, towards the more expensive drugs. There are even programs where if patients protest enough, they can get a coupon and they won't have to pay a copay at all. Well, that sounds marvelous. It sounds great. Of course, at the end of the day, what it means is that your health insurance is continuing to buy a high-priced drug. You're ending up paying more in your premium. And at the end of the day, the cheap drug gets pushed out of the market.
Jim, thanks for that call. I want to turn to Raquel in Delaware. You're on the air, Raquel. Welcome.
Hi. I was just wondering why pharmacies need to deal with the middleman in the first place. If the spread is such a big issue, why don't they just deal with the drug companies, like, one-on-one?
Right. All right. So, Donnie Sullivan, why do insurance companies use a middleman in the first place? Why don't they just negotiate them themselves?
You know, because the PBMs come in and they tell the insurance companies, well, we can provide you with X amount of dollars of cost savings. We can provide you with taking care of all the administrative load of putting the formularies together and all the negotiations with all the manufacturers and all those types of things. So they come in as having a big role to take a lot of workload and to provide cost savings to them. And I do believe that they do provide some cost savings, but not all the cost savings. And it gets to the point where the young lady here from the dispatch talked about how much is too much of that money that they're making. on that difference between what they're paying the pharmacies and what they're actually paying the insurance company. And, you know, the pharmacies are caught in the middle of all this. You know, they 90% of all prescriptions are paid for by some type of third party insurance. And if they don't sign and agree to take those contracts, as is most of the time, then they're locked out. And then there's a significant amount of patients right in their own neighborhoods that can't even get their things filled at their local pharmacy.
Yeah. Kathy Kandisky.
Well, that's right. You have to take, you know, like in the Medicaid world, if you don't take Medicaid, if you're a pharmacy that does half your business with Medicaid patients, you've got to deal with the PBMs that Medicaid employs, or else, you know, you won't have your business.
Hmm. In December, Kathy, you wrote that Ohio Medicaid Director Barbara Sears was skewered by – and that's the word you use, skewered – by state lawmakers last summer. You wrote that the lawmakers echoed some of CVS Caremark's talking points to justify the millions that the state was receiving. What do we know about PBM's contributions to state lawmakers, and what's at play there?
I don't have the numbers in front of me, but we did some reporting earlier. The managed care companies were donors to both gubernatorial candidates in Ohio this fall, which for good reason. I mean, if you look at the Ohio checkbook online, you can see that the managed care companies get the biggest amount of state revenues. CareSource, which is the biggest Medicaid managed care plan, was paid more than any other vendor in the state last year. And I think the other four are in the top five. So there's a lot of money to be made. There's a lot of influence.
The same is happening on a federal level, too. So many of the proposals that are floating out there will ultimately require congressional approval. That's difficult, given the pharmacy industry strength in Congress. So last year, the pharmaceutical industry as a whole spent nearly $280 million on lobbying. That's an extraordinary sum. And those efforts were geared slightly more towards Republicans than Democrats, but that just reflects the current breakdown in Congress.
Right.
Pharma's ecumenical. It spends lavishly on both parties and it gets results because of that.
It tells you how much money's at stake.
Hmm. Jim in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, thank you. Go ahead.
So I'd like to offer a personal anecdote which shows how important the kind of investigative journalism that Kathy Kandisky is doing. So about a year ago, I was diagnosed with diabetes, and I went to the pharmacy that I usually go to, CVS, to fill it. I was sort of in shock, and then I was in greater shock when they said, well, that will be $400. So No, this was for metformin, which is a very common oral medication that diabetics take.
Mm-hmm.
I was so surprised.
Oh, rats, we lost Jim. Let's try to get Jim back. Jim?
Yes, I'm
okay.
Here.
Okay, yeah. So you said you were surprised. Yep, go ahead.
Yeah, I was surprised, but I was also in a state of shock because of the diagnosis. So I paid the $400. And then over the weekend, I started investigating, and I found that in Canada, I can get it for $5. And I talked to my pharmacist about that, and he said, well, that's Canada, you know. Sort of dismissively. And then I did a little more work and I found that I could get the same thing at Walgreens, you know, just a couple miles away.
Hmm. Jim, we lost you again. Oh. I'm assuming he's going to save for a lot less money than $400.
Right.
Kathy Kandisky, are you collecting a lot of anecdotes from your series?
We do. And for consumers, it's really frustrating because, you know, if you're sick or you get a diagnosis like Jim got and you're troubled by it, the last thing you're thinking about is shopping around for your meds or even going to Canada to buy things. But you certainly hear stories like that.
Yeah.
You know, I would be very, very careful. I mean, we think of Canada as a country very similar to us, just right across the border. But when you start delving into the area of purchasing things overseas, even from Canada, most of the time the websites that look like they're from Canada are not in Canada. They're in South America. They're in Far East,
yeah.
Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
So I would be extremely careful.
But you can't blame people on fixed incomes and that kind of a thing. And Nick, I'm going to put you on because I know that I asked this earlier, but I'll let you ask it again. Go ahead, Nick. Nick, are you there?
Oh, hi. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, so yeah, my question was just about the legality of these spreads.
Right.
It sounded almost like fraud to me, where they're just taking this money out and not reporting it to anyone, and it's higher than it actually should be.
Yeah, I mean, Robin Feldman, that gets to the whole, how is this legal? I mean, you know, there ought to be a law kind of a thing.
So you're absolutely right. It is very troubling to see what is essentially large companies being able to pay off everybody in the line. You think that ought to be illegal. Right now, at least in the Medicare rules, there's a safe harbor that allows them to do that. There is an administration proposal to remove that safe harbor and to look at all these payments as illegal kickbacks to government entities. There are some loopholes with even that proposal in terms of what the pharmaceutical companies could call the payments and then shuffle the money into. But you are right. If you step back and think about it from a legal perspective, this should be an antitrust violation. This should be anti-competitive. It should be considered kickbacks. The laws ought to evolve to take care of this problem.
Nick, thanks a lot for that call. And Donnie Sullivan, I wanted to go back to your point that it's very interesting. People have to be careful when they're looking for alternatives about where they go. But are there safe places to go? I mean, are there options?
You know, I think probably your best option is to probably shop around a little bit.
Shop locally first.
Yep. Have that conversation with your pharmacist. You know, a lot of times your pharmacist could maybe even recommend other alternatives that they could have that conversation with you and your physician about other potential cheaper alternatives out there. I mean, research has shown physicians have a lot on their plate, and a lot of times they really don't have any idea how much certain medications cost. And that's where, you know, just ask your pharmacist, you know, is there something cheaper in the same drug class or something cheaper that's available generically that might be able to do the same thing? And could you help me have that conversation with my physician?
I want to turn to Cindy in Westerville. Cindy, we're running out of time, but I wanted to get to you. Go ahead.
Hi there.
Hi.
I just thought, you know, the conversation about the spread was really, really succinct and helped me understand that a lot. But I wanted to take the conversation one step further. And I did hear it a little bit from one of the one of your guests, which is that spread is then passed on to me, the insured via my premium. Because my company, I've been insured my entire life. I've always worked for a company that's had private insurance, and I've seen my insurance go from, like, in 1985, that's how old I am, 1985 to zero, right? No copays, no nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To huge premiums and huge deductibles, and I talk to my HR people, what's going on? And they say, well, we're having to pay more, and we're not even passing on all of our costs to you guys. And the pharmaceutical, those spreads are getting passed on to you, the private citizen, via these premiums, that our premiums just keep going up and
right.
up and up.
Yeah, this isn't, I think Cindy makes an interesting point, Robin Feldman. This isn't just stopping at pharmacy costs. This is affecting all of our healthcare costs.
I think this is cost shifting. If the prices are going to go up, both the list prices and the real prices that are paid at the end of the day, then that cost is going to get shifted. Number one place we see cost shifting is onto the patient. So premiums can go up, but also coverage can go down. So you have to pay higher deductibles. You have to pay co-insurance rates or co-pays, often at these very high list prices. So at the end of the day, what's coming out of the patient's pocket is much more than it used to be a few years ago or a decade ago. You also shift costs to government programs. There are complicated rules in the Medicare system that make it so that if your Medicare plan pushes you into a more expensive drug, the government picks up more of the tab. That's great for everybody, except, of course, for you, the taxpayer.
Right. Robin Feldman, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here with you.
Robin Feldman teaches law at the University of California Hastings College of Law, and she's the author of the forthcoming book. It's coming out in March. It's titled Drugs, Money, and Secret Handshakes, The Unstoppable Growth of Prescription Drug Prices. Also, Donnie Sullivan, professor of clinical pharmacy at Ohio State, thanks as always for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And Kathy Kandinsky, she's a Columbus Dispatch reporter. She's part of the team that's been covering this issue for many months. We'll have a link to the series on our website at WOSU.org. Kathy, as always, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
And thanks to our listeners. Great calls. Appreciate your time as well. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.